Hello and welcome to Crosshairs Radio, episode one. I'm Bill Shiken from cxhairs.com in the crosshairs, and what you are listening to is a new podcast that will follow cyclocross both in the US and in Europe the day after the races happen. So the goal here is to grab a couple of folks who raced over the weekend, call them up, have a chat with them about the race, about their lives, about what happened from when the whistle went off to when they finished, but also when they got there, what they're doing next, and everything in between. That's it. It's a conversation. It's getting inside the heads of the people who are racing at the highest level of cyclocross. And we started out with a great episode with Meredith Miller, Noosa Pro Cycling. You know her. She won Ellison Park day two, came in second on day one. Had a great conversation with Meredith. Followed it up with a conversation with Hot Sauce Cycling, Mark McConnell. Mark's Canadian, and he races in Belgium, and he's a pretty rad dude. And he was in Ellison Park racing as well, starting his campaign off of the 2015-2016 season. Had a good conversation with him. Hope you enjoy those. We're going to get into it right now. Here is Meredith Miller. Thanks for listening. I'm on the line with Meredith Miller from the Noosa Pro Cyclocross team. Meredith, a second place yesterday and then first place today. Just give me your general thoughts on the weekend.
Oh, it was a really, really tough weekend. It was about 90 degrees, and I feel like it was 100% humidity, especially coming from Colorado where it's been really hot, but of course we have dry conditions. We raced, you know, at the Oscar Blues Farm last weekend, and it was 95, but dry. So we've been used to racing in the heat, but this weekend was like a whole nother level when you throw in the humidity. And I think, you know, it took its toll on a lot of people this weekend. And luckily I had the fitness to fight through it and, you know, was doing well to stay hydrated and all that. But, you know, everybody was kind of like, oh my gosh, why are we racing cross so early? This is way too early. But, you know, after the weekend and reflecting back on it, I think, you know, it was the perfect preparation for those of us who are going to be racing Las Vegas, because we're going to have very similar conditions with the heat, humidity, and the dry, you know, thick grass that we'll be racing on. So this was like, this was a good reminder of what Las Vegas is going to be like. And, you know, in Ellison Park and, you know, the whole organization here does a really great job of putting on this race. And the venue itself is just, it's incredible. It's awesome. Good atmosphere out there. So even though it was early, it was a good way to kick off the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, you sort of pointed out there, you're trading what you probably have in altitude fitness over some of the other competitors who've been training in hotter conditions. But then, but everybody's putting up with the heat. And, you know, it seems like it got resolved today, but, you know, we've been talking throughout the weekend over the confusion on the new pit rules and the no feed. Just, you know, it's good to see that there was a solution, but how did that work out? And what really, you know, what were your feelings on the whole scenario from yesterday?
Yeah, it's quite a mess. And, you know, and honestly, I think that the, you know, the rule was instated because of some, you know, issues with, I think, Sven and whoever last year at Las Vegas and maybe a couple other races. And it was like, okay, well, we just need to fix this. And so then they just do away with feeding altogether. Well, that's not the solution. That's just ignoring, you know, that's just taking the easy way out. And, you know, and cross obviously starts really early here in the U.S. and races are getting hotter. You know, we're certainly not, I mean, it's even hot for here in New York, I think, at this time of year, and more humid than usual. But, you know, so yesterday it was quite ridiculous. You know, I mean, they had told us that, okay, if you guys start with a bottle on your bike, if you finish that bottle and you want to take a pit bike and your pit bike has a bottle on it, we'll kind of give you a warning the first time, but the second time that happens, you know, we'll take action. And it's like, okay, that's accommodating and taking into consideration the conditions. But then for some reason they wouldn't let people dump water on us in the women's race, but then they did for the men's race.
Yeah.
So everybody had a talk, like the direct, Stu Thorne and the, officials, and everybody talked after the race yesterday, and like, it's like, look, this is not healthy. We can't do this again tomorrow. And I think it was even a little bit hotter, more humid today. And right. So then today they decided to put in a hydration zone. And that way you could actually take a bottle or have water dumped on you through one small section of the second pit each lap.
Okay.
And that was definitely a saving grace. And so I think everybody still raced. A lot of people still raced with a bottle on their bike, and then either just took a quick feed or had some water dumped on them. The rest of the race, and that was definitely
right.
Helpful for sure.
Yeah, it seems like, of the list of issues out there that may exist for cyclocross and improving it, that this shouldn't have been one that was tackled so aggressively, because I even look at races like like Francochamps, which was the French race, and the pit was such a mess, and the UCI had no control of it, and they're piling bikes on top of each other. That's the kind of stuff. That wasn't a feeding issue. So yeah. it seems like there are...
Right.
There are bigger things out there. Speaking of which, what?
Oh, absolutely.
What in your mind? I think Power said that this is pretty far down the list of issues to deal with. What would you say? Just being in this game for so long, are the sort of the top of your list of issues that the UCI should be tackling for cyclocross?
Oh boy, that's a good question. I guess one is, and this is one of the things on Jeremy's list too, is, minimum temperatures to race in. Because we've got the extreme heat this weekend, and you can combat that more or less with water and hydration and being able to feed in the races. But then when you have those low, low, low temperatures like you did in Bend a couple of years ago, I mean, there's not really a whole lot you can do about that. You can only put on so many clothes and still be able to pedal a bike.
Right.
And not to say that dehydration isn't very serious, but, the hypothermia and stuff, I think, that's a lot harder to control.
Yeah, absolutely.
That one is, I'm trying to think of what else comes to mind, I guess. I know there's been an argument for a while about potentially using studded tires in icy conditions.
You're right.
I don't really know what the consensus is on that, but I mean, Sven has, I think, been a huge proponent of wanting to use studded tires in icy conditions and having raced on ice enough at Worlds and whatnot. Sure, that would be kind of nice.
Right. The one I throw out there too is also tackling the disparity in prize money and that kind of thing among just for overall UCI issues, that's one that I think I would put definitely above some of these other technical issues.
Yeah, of course. I can't believe I didn't even think of that.
No, I know. It was just...
I mean, that's huge. And especially, I think the U.S. has really wanted to tackle that issue, and it's not, I think, not surprising. I think that the U.S. tends to be a little more progressive and ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
When it comes to that, equality for men and women more so than, Europe, I think. And so a lot of the organizers are really stepping up and doing a great job of wanting to take that on. And certainly appreciate that immensely, but then when you go over to Europe and you hear what the guys, what kind of money they're bringing in for start money plus prize money, it's crazy. I think Helen Lemon, mentioned last year that she can come here and win a C1 and still make, more money than she gets with start money and winning a C1 combined in Europe.
Right, absolutely. And let me just say that
it's just
I
crazy.
Yeah,
it's just insane.
I I like it that you went technical and stuff and were thinking about racing and the bike first. That was kind of cool. Because the women's issue and the equality, that's always going to be out there. And that's a huge one. But no, that was.
Yeah.
I think they had those other ones out there too.
And the equality stuff, the equality stuff too is hard because there's no easy answer. It's not like you can just throw the money out there and
absolutely.
Women all center to show up, you know? And so I understand that there's a, you know, why organizers aren't necessarily always wanting to jump right in and do that, because it's like, okay, they throw out a 10 grand prize purse and, you know, they still only get, you know, 30, 40 women in the field, maybe not so much on in cross, but I'm thinking road too, or crits and stuff. And it's like, I wish it was that easy that all of a sudden they were just going to show up. But, there's never, there's hardly a right or wrong answer.
Oh, absolutely.
Or maybe enough wrong answers, but finding the right answer is hard. And yeah, so we're getting there. I feel like we're, you know, there's some strong people, you know, some strong personalities on the committee and stuff like that. And so, I think they've got a great voice for the rest of us, and, you know, we're making headway.
Right.
Sure.
And I think the way I look at it is I completely understand. I mean, in the end, this is a business, this is a job for you, and,
mm-hmm.
and everybody has to, you know, show a profit at the end. Where my frustration comes in, and this comes more from advertising and how do we, you know, get people
right.
to understand what's going on here, is that if you look at the UCI European calendar last year, there is a really strong argument to be made that the women's racing was as, if not more exciting than the men's racing. So you're putting out a product that, if it's pushed out to people, is something exciting that I think they could get into,
right.
and then the marketing money
right.
follows, and then where you want to be.
Right, right. Well, and then so yesterday I was watching Mountain Bike World, and on Red Bull TV.
Yeah.
And I threw out a tweet, was like, please, 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 Red Bull TV consider picking up cross races too. And I don't know the ins and outs of it all. I don't know the relationship between Red Bull TV and the UCI and UCI Cross. And obviously they're covering the Mountain Bike World Cups, which is, under the UCI. So I'm not really sure what it would take for someone like Red Bull TV to come in and televise it. And I know over in, Europe, you can turn on the TV and watch cross race any day or
right.
time, but those are a little bit harder for us to see here, and so it would be amazing to see someone like
yeah.
Red Bull TV step up and do that. And I just don't know what that relationship is like.
Yeah, I think there's something to do with the road and cyclocross seems to be coupled together. So Universal, whoever gets that contract, cyclocross is sort of thrown in. So then getting that away from them, but yeah, I agree with you. The Red
right.
Bull is just the coverage is amazing, and it'd be great to see that cross.
It's phenomenal.
Let's talk about the weekend. Saturday's race versus today's race, anything different out there or just the way it played out? Give me sort of the lowdown on the racing.
So like I said, it was really hot and humid. So the conditions themselves, I think, took their toll on a lot of people. And, so it's, when I look back, it's a little hard to say, okay, I think fitness obviously had, played a big role in the weekend and how everyone was able to tolerate the heat. But then you look at someone like Courtney McFadden, who came out from Seattle, and she said it's been, 60 and raining the last few days
right.
or last few weeks or whatever. So it's like, certainly someone like her is not going to be prepared for these conditions. But it was, you could see as you watched the race, you could see people starting to come unglued. It's like
right.
there was a big, big pack together for the first couple laps. And then, one by one, people slowly started to, fall off the back of the group until like yesterday. And then, till it was just me, Katie, Crystal, and Amanda. Yeah. And I'm not necessarily just on the, on these hills. And so I knew I had to take a chance and kind of try to get over those climbs. I knew I had to break up that group a little bit because I didn't want to come to the finish with everyone or let them out climb me, because after the top of the climb, it wasn't far to finish. And
right.
so I took my chance and went for it. And, and Katie eventually caught me I mean, kudos to her. I've been watching her race on the road this year, and she's been riding so strong, so strong, and Amanda Miller as well. And so I knew those two were going to be strong this weekend. A lot of other people were sort of question marks because I haven't seen them racing much, or, you know, seen them in results, but haven't seen it in person. And so those two were definitely my picks for the weekend. And, you know, so hats off to Katie for catching me and taking the win yesterday, and proud of her too for taking her first UCI win ever, which blows me away. I cannot believe that was her first UCI
yeah
win.
Really, that's amazing.
I'm like, no way. She's like, yeah, for sure. I'm like, I can't believe it. But yeah, so, and then today, you know, that we, it was backwards of what we raced yesterday, and I think it might have been a little more human today. It was sort of the same thing, just kind of had to be patient, because go out too fast in the beginning and blow yourself up. Like, it was really, really hard to recover up there today. So you just kind of had to play a waiting game a little bit, you know, and fast enough that things break up. But, you know, eventually it's just naturally going to break up. It was kind of a race of attrition too. And, you know, and so then Katie and I found ourselves kind of together in the last few laps, and I could not hold her wheel. Like, I was a bike and a half, two bike lengths off almost like the entire last two laps, and last three laps, and then finally came around her on the last half lap. And I was like, okay, we're coming into a hard section, and I knew I wanted to lead through that because she'd been gapping me, and I just couldn't close it. And, you know, and sometimes it's better to be, you know, play the offense and
defense. Right.
You know, and I was actually surprised I caught her to begin with, because, like I said, I was struggling to stay on her wheel. And so that just, you know, I think it was taking its toll. The conditions were taking its toll on her too. And, you know, so luckily I was able to hold it off today. You know, again, took a chance, and it it worked. And, but it was really brutal out there. I mean, at the finish, everybody was like, "Wow, that was harder today than yesterday." And
when you came around there, is that just, did you just know that's it? It's like, give everything then and just try to gap her at that point, and that was going to be the race.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I was surprised that I gapped her actually, especially because we were coming into a fast, you know, downhill section, and so I think I just got just enough of a jump on her. And I was worried that she was going to, you know, catch me on the downhill. And then we had two run-ups and, you know, and another slight climb after that still. And so I was like, okay, I had to dig as hard as I could. And, you know, knowing when she caught me yesterday, it's like, okay, you gave it everything you had, you get caught, and you're kind of like, oh, just for that split second.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that's what it was for her today too. I don't know, but yeah, it was just kind of playing a waiting game today. Cause it like I said, if you went out too hard, it was really hard to recover.
Absolutely.
And, and so it wasn't so much of a, sorry, there's a plane going overhead. You know, it wasn't today, I don't think, too much of like people just attacking the crap out of each other. I don't think it was that way at all this weekend. It was more just like kind of playing cat and mouse, kind of playing a real tactical sort of chess game. And it's like, okay, who wants to take the fun and who's gonna, you know, save it until the end? And, you know, yeah, it's sometimes a tough way to race like that, and not wanting to be out there and just throwing it down all the time and trying to smack people. And you know, it really was that kind of a mental tactical game.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's what makes it fun, is that you can have, you know, so many different scenarios out there. So you mentioned how similar Ellison Park is to Cross Vegas as far as terrain and the grass and everything. What was your setup today as far as tires and pressure and all that stuff? And is that something that was, you were using this almost as a test event going into Vegas to try to figure out what you're going to do there?
You know, I've done Vegas enough times that I'm pretty sure I know what I'm going to do there.
Right.
And I mean, I rode.
Well, you only won it last year. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I rode MXPs last year, and I rode MXPs this weekend as well. I think it's the same in Vegas too, but here, you know, they cut the grass a few days ago or whenever, and so there's a lot of dry grass just sitting right on the top. And, you know, I'm sure the earlier races yesterday felt it even more, but you had to be careful through some of the turns because if you, you know, rode over the top of that dry grass, you'd just slide right out. And so I personally feel more confident having a tire like an MXP where, you know, I have a little bit of knobs on the side to dig into the turns.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, feel like I can carve them a little bit more rather than being cautious and putting a foot down or, you know, whatever it might be. And so, you know, that obviously worked well for me, and it worked well last year at Las Vegas. Right. So pretty sure I'll probably do the same thing.
Good. What tire pressures are you running?
Today, yesterday I ran like 22, 23, and today was actually, I went a little more, 24, 24, because yesterday, some of the sections are a bit rooty, and so yesterday the way that the lines worked, you could ride around the roots. Today, they took you right over the roots, and so I went a little bit higher today just to, you know, prevent hitting my rim too many times, and I don't remember what I did at Vegas. I don't know that it was that. I don't know. It's 22 is kind of like my go-to pressure. You know, and I don't usually. I don't usually ride more than 24. That I don't even usually ride that high. And you know, I mean, gosh, last year at Worlds it was more like 14 or something.
Right,
like
right.
That.
Yeah. Well, those,
yeah. So
those conditions were, yeah.
Conditions. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And these are a little unusual. Yeah, after Vegas, we don't really see these kind of conditions too much more.
Sure. So what is your plan going into next week? Are you racing next weekend? And then you got.
No.
Okay.
Nope.
So nothing
no
next weekend.
Next
and
weekend,
then.
Go home tomorrow.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
And then when are you showing up in Vegas?
Actually, not until Tuesday.
Okay.
So we'll kind of fly in Tuesday afternoon. We'll, you know, we'll probably miss the pre-ride on Tuesday and, you know, get out there and do the pre-ride, the official training, you know, session probably Wednesday morning. Everything I've heard, the course is the same,
right.
More or less the same. It really has never changed too much. And you know, because of the heat and humidity out there, I think it's better to kind of just, yeah, keep it low key, stay cool, not spend a lot of time out there on the course on Tuesday when it's a heavy course.
Right.
You know, actually on Friday when Alan and I got here, we did a TV, interview Friday morning, and then we did our pre-ride on the road because it's hot, humid, and it's a really heavy course, and it's a straightforward course,
right,
you know.
Right.
So there was really no reason to go spend a lot of energy pre-riding a course that we've done before, we're familiar with, and it just zaps your energy.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So absolutely.
We'll get to do our pre-ride in Boulder on Tuesday and go home, and then you know go out and see the course Wednesday, you know, Wednesday morning, and that'd be good.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me, and look forward to seeing you in Cross Vegas. Thanks so much, Meredith, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, that was great to talk with Meredith and catch up with her. Next on tap, we have a conversation with Mark McConnell, who is Hot Sauce Cycling. If you haven't read about Mark, check out his story on cxhairs.com. It's a great one. I know you all are going to become big fans if you're not already. So let's get to it. Here is Hot Sauce Cycling. We are on the line now with Mark McConnell, who is also known as Hot Sauce Cycling. If you saw In the crosshairs yesterday, Mark put up a nice piece there, and hopefully he'll carry on with a column for us throughout the year. He's got a great story. Go to cxharris.com, check that out, and learn all the background. I won't bore you with the details of that right now from me, because we have him on the line and can get it from the man himself. So, Mark, how you doing?
Hey, Bill. I'm good. Just kind of winding down after the race today.
Yeah, so this was Ellison Park, two days of racing. You know, you're coming from Canada. Just tell us sort of what your schedule is coming into this, you know, what you're doing at home to get ready, and then sort of travel plans and how that went showing up for the race.
Yeah, I've been kind of building up to the kickoff of the season here. I wanted to get one big race in before Vegas in about a week and a half now, I guess. It's coming up quick. Ellison was great because it was super warm, which was a challenge in itself. But just kind of being similar to that kind of heat humidity level that Vegas will be at, which was nice. And I mean, getting one out the door before a big World Cup like that is, I think, pretty important, especially because we haven't been racing since February.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
you split your time between Canada and then heading over and living in the Netherlands and racing in Belgium. When you're back in Canada, when you're at home, are you working? Are you still doing courier work? Are you being able to train while doing that? What's your schedule like, sort of in your off season?
Yeah. So when we came back, I technically wasn't really working in Belgium when I was racing. So I kind of went back to being a bike courier and kind of juggling a little more kind of part-time hours with full-time training. So right now, I was kind of on the bike roughly 15 to 20 hours a week for courier, and then, training another 15 to 20 hours, of just specific training as well. So it's a lot. You're tired all the time, but I figured 3.5 months of moonlighting in Belgium is going to be worth it, once I can get back over there. But yeah, we're making it work right now. I'm super thankful to be racing again, because you kind of get to be a bike racer on the weekends at least, and go back to real life during the week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got it wrong too. You're in Belgium full time when you're there, and you have housing, and it's hot sauce cycling 24/7 when you're over there, right?
Yeah, it's great. You can just enter full-on bike racer, where you just get to live that dream, and it's a pretty cool experience that I get to do that, just because of the sponsors and the people involved that have kind of helped support me through that hot sauce cycling campaign. So
yeah, that's awesome, and that continues to go on. If people want to contribute, what can they do?
Yeah, it's great. It's gone from kind of caps and t-shirts. It's now grown into a full cycling apparel line this year with
Jack the kits look sweet. Yeah, they look great.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was kind of playing off just other nicknames that were kind of called at me in Belgium last year, and with the beard and everything, and being from Canada, I thought, why not go with a lumberjack theme this year and just kind of spice it up a bit.
That's awesome. Well,
I have basically everything's available on the online Big Cartel, which is hotsaucecycling.bigcartel.com.
Awesome.
And, yeah, you can go on and check it out.
Cool. So I want to get to your experience at Ellison Park, but I'm going to jump ahead here because this is all sort of building up to Vegas, and you will be racing for Team Canada. What is the selection process like for that? Who else is going to be lining up with you from Canada?
Yeah, they had a kind of working group of cyclocross in Canada that involved a few people at CCA, and they had some athletes as well, and they sat down and they brainstormed kind of a top five to seven, I believe, criteria list, and that involved kind of a mixture of UCI points, world rankings, top placings in World Cups, and then it kind of trickled down into C1 and C2 events.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to qualify for, I believe, seventh out of the eight men. And yeah, we're going to have, I can't actually think of everyone on the top of my head.
Oh, that's okay.
Right now.
It's not a quiz.
Okay, cool. I feel pretty lucky. Like I'm kind of just starting from basically ground zero as of last year. I took a year off from UCI racing. So, you know, getting over to Belgium, experiencing the World Cups and kind of starting to point build again, I think is really going to help this year and hopefully springboard into the next.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, and that's just sort of the wonderful thing. I think it's the thing that a lot of people can relate to from your story. I mean, you really are living the dream. You know, that's not to say you're not a talented racer, you know, and above most folks that are racing out there today. You know, you're in that top percentage, but at the same time people look at you and go, you know, and they really like it because that guy's doing it. He went out there, he committed, and he's doing it. And I think it's awesome too how the Belgians have picked up on that and have seen your success and are cheering for you, and you know, and it seems like, you know, every year it's a little better, and you know, you're getting a little farther along in these races.
Yeah, I was totally humbled last year just at how well received as a foreigner, as a Canadian, anyone really over in Europe. I mean, they welcome you with open arms because they love and admire their sport so much. And to see someone come from, you know, international waters to come and live that experience, I think they really appreciate it and embrace it. So I think, it's kind of just, some would consider maybe putting life on hold to go and live this dream. But for me, I don't know, it's, what else would I rather be doing? I can't really think of anything right now. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So figure why not do it now?
Working in towards Ellison Park. What's the summer been like in Alberta? What conditions have you been training in?
Yeah, it was. It's funny talking about this. I've been training pretty much full on since I returned home from Belgium, with the expectation that I wanted to go back. And so I took a pretty casual road calendar, just focusing more so on base building and just kind of getting prepared for that intensity later on over the cross season. But I was actually was hit by a car a couple months ago.
Oh.
And so that kind of put a little divot in training. We don't have to get into it too much, but yeah, it just kind of knocked about a month out of my training. I was actually questioning the whole trip this year, but luckily, you know, things are back on track and going in the right direction. So, yeah,
awesome.
It's been ebb and flow over the summer, but I feel like, you know, starting the season now, I feel stronger than I personally have ever been. So I'm pretty excited.
That's great. So you show up Ellison Park. Conditions, you know, I actually talked to Meredith Miller about this earlier, that the conditions are similar to Vegas in that it's going to be hot, humid, and you have this really soul-sapping thick grass to work through for the whole course, and there's some elevation. What, you know, after getting in and being able to just pre-ride the course, what were your initial thoughts of what the racing was going to be like?
Yesterday, it's funny, when you look at the two profiles, they ran it in reverse today, and it's the same amount of climbing, but there was something about the way they set up the course today that made the climb a little more sufferable, I guess I could say, as opposed to running more on a kind of zigzag upward direction. It was more of a direct switchback where you would go more parallel to the course and then quickly jump up. And so it was a series of those kind of climbs today, which made the whole thing much more manageable. As for the grass, I don't know. Vegas is, it's soupy, man. Like, it's, today, the grass really degraded quickly, especially after all the categories.
Yep.
By the time our race rolled around. I mean, the dust and the dirt that was flying up was, it was a little hard on the lungs, actually, at some points. But, it was great.
Yeah, I guess that is the difference. You know, in Vegas, there isn't that Cat 4, Cat 5 contingent there to sort of flatten everything down for the pro races. So it's a little fresher and a little tougher. What did you, you know, there was the big controversy about the feeds and the not being allowed to have water. How did that affect you, and how did you prepare for at least Saturday, certainly when you weren't allowed any bottles after your initial one, if you even had any on your bike to start?
Yeah, so Saturday I went in prepared, just kind of accepting the new rule, and I put a bottle on the bike. I quickly wrangled a volunteer for the pit, because I'm kind of down here alone, but I didn't really expect them to bend the rules the way they did. You know, I heard Ellen Noble was fined for taking a bottle on her bike and in the pits. And anyway, so when they told us, for me, it was like literally on the start line when they said that they were going to allow, you know, a bottle hand up. And here I am thinking, oh, great, like, you know, I'm here alone. I didn't really organize this. So every time I went by, they had a kid with a hose who was just spraying everyone, which helped a little bit.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, for us guys that don't have support, it was nice. But, you know, yesterday I kind of felt like, you know, if you're not with a team, you're kind of SOL. But today it was nice to organize, you know, in advance, people to, you know, douse you in water or give you a bottle hand up.
And right.
I think it was a little more even today, and I'm just glad it's a little more transparent. And I feel like you said in your post earlier, hopefully it's a moot point later on, because it's just such, I don't know. I think it's a pretty silly.
Yeah.
It's hard enough as it is, just racing cross. And to kind of take away that, I think just adds an unnecessary level.
Right.
I don't really understand it.
And, you know, this is something that Powers had touched on, and other folks is like, of all of the issues out there that the UCI could be dealing with, this really seems like pretty far down on the list for them to sort of crack down on hard on this one.
Yeah, it was like borderline dangerous. It was dangerous, I think, for a few athletes, especially on Saturday. I mean, people were quitting the race and getting sick. Like, even myself, I felt completely in a haze afterwards. And
right.
Anyways, yeah, that's bike racing, but I think to some degree it's unnecessary for sure.
Yeah, so, but, you know, all of that aside, sort of kicking out the cobwebs, coming back from this injury, you satisfied, you know, obviously not going into this looking for results, being the first race and coming back, were you satisfied with how the weekend went?
Yeah, I mean, you know, racing domestic, kind of UCI, North American Cyclocross is it's super tough still. Belgium and the U.S., it's two different worlds, but still very much the same in that there's a lot of top guys. And, you know, I'm just looking to get back into that process of, you know, going out every weekend, going to the UCI races, getting in that kind of mindset of, rather than just a local race, which is still great and everything, but you've got to get to the bigger races, I think, to develop as kind of an elite crosser in this sport. And, you know, so when I can kind of mix now this year a U.S. and European schedule, I'm all the more excited for what comes down the road. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you feel like you're in some sort of secret competition with Robert Marion, and even like, you know, before and a follow-up to that, do you feel betrayed by Timmerman shaving?
Oh, man. I mean, Timmerman was jamming, I think, long before I even joined the sport. And I got to say, the first time I read about Timmerman, I was like, I had a bit of a man crush on the guy, because, like, I ended up reading his blog, and I guess he's like this, you know, really crafty woodsman
right.
who hunts his own food. And anyways, so it's pretty funny. You see beards come and go in the sport, and now it's, you know, Rob and myself and probably a couple others that I can't think of right now. But, you know, Rob he's such a nice guy, and his wife actually was one of the people helping me out with a bottle hand up.
Oh, great.
So we'll be actually residing at the same residence in Belgium this year.
Oh, outstanding.
So
cool.
I think that'll be a good mix.
Yeah, there. Well, I'll have to get both of you on here and do some updates from the beard house.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right, man. So what's the plan like from today until the 16th in Cross Vegas?
Yeah, I'm going to head back home tomorrow and just keep it local for a weekend back home in Alberta, and then fly out on Monday, the following Monday, and just start getting ready, getting prepped for the Vegas heat under the bright lights.
Awesome. And then after that, how much more time do you have in North America until you head over to Belgium?
I'm planning to head back for just before Cogside, so mid-November.
Right.
Hopefully I'll be able to get in this year. I'm looking forward to, Gloucester, Providence for the first time.
Oh, excellent.
But yeah, I'm going to do those two, and then potentially a few other UCIs. I'm thinking maybe Baltimore.
Oh, that's great.
And Cyclosmode International.
Nice.
As well.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely see you. I'll be announcing the race at Charm City for Baltimore. And then you should also pencil in October 24th and 25th for DCCX if you can swing that.
That's our Canadian Nationals.
That's right. I knew that. That's right. I knew there was a conflict there. Yeah.
We're that weird country that has it like way before everyone else.
Well, probably out of necessity.
Okay. It makes going to Europe a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's awesome. Well, it was really great to talk to you, Mark. And, I look forward to, and I think a lot of the readers and followers of In the Crosshairs do as well, look forward to following your season. And we wish you the best of luck and hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Bill. I really appreciate it.
And all right.
Thanks for reading, everybody.
Boom. So there it is. That is it for episode one of Crosshairs Radio. Hope you enjoyed that. Please let me know what you thought. Drop me a line at feedback@cxhairs.com. You can also tweet me at cxhairs. Also, if you're looking for other podcasts to listen to, check out the KDF podcast at KDF podcast. That's a music podcast that we do. Me and a couple cycling buddies get together and talk music. So if you're looking for a diversion away from cyclocross, and I don't know why you would, check that out. Thanks again to Meredith Miller and Mark McConnell for joining us, and we will see you here next week for episode 2 of Crosshairs Radio. Later on.